Welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Today is April 23rd, 2018. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. And with me this morning is Senator Gardner. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Senator Stevens, welcome.
Thank you.
And Vice Chair Senator Meyer, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Carrie, and the LIO operator, Eileen. Thank you for your help today. Today we have three items on the agenda. The first one is House Bill 340, which is repeal the BIDCO assistance program. That'll be followed by House Bill 343 related to premium finance companies exam requirements, and then finally House Bill 262 related to military spouse courtesy license. So with that, I'd like to welcome Commissioner Mike Navarre. Welcome this morning, and feel free to introduce House Bill 340 to the committee members.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Mike Navarre, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. House Bill 340 is a BIDCO assistance program. A BIDCO program was established in state law in 1992, and in 2004, a loan and financial assistance aspect was added to it. No loans or financial assistance have ever been provided under the loan program because that program was never funded by the legislature. This legislation simply removes it from the statutes and cleans up the statutes. And if you have additional questions, Christy Naylor and Patrice Walsh are available online with the Division of Banking and Securities. And this was a recommendation of the recently retired director of the Division of Banking just to help clean up the statutes.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. My only question, is there a similar program that the department oversees that's similar to this, or is this just a program that we never use?
Madam Chair, committee members, you know, I guess I could argue that there are loans available through ADA for business and industrial development. There's also a number of different loans within the department. This one was specific to the BIDCO program, and as I said, it was determined by the legislature never to fund the program and make it available. So I don't know that there are others specific there, but this was intended to be sort of like the SBA and provide loans to businesses, and was determined that there were other opportunities in the financial market to meet the need.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there questions from committee members? Okay, seeing none, I'll go ahead and open public testimony just because this is the first committee in the Senate for this bill. So is there anyone here in Juneau or online who wishes to testify on House Bill 340? Okay, seeing none. Public testimony is now closed. Since there are no questions and it's pretty straightforward, Senator Meyer.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 340, version A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay. So is there any objection to moving House Bill 340, which repeals a program that has not been used by the state, from committee with individual recommendations, accompanying fiscal note? Okay, seeing none, the bill moves. And I'll go ahead and just move directly into House Bill 343 as we get the signing documents passed around. Again, this is a bill that the commissioner is going to be explaining to the committee, and it's related to examination of premium finance companies. And with that, Commissioner Navarre, feel free to explain the bill for us this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Mike Navarre, Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. House Bill 343 simply exempts premium finance companies from an 18-month required examination. It's a specialized area of financing, mostly for large business transactions, occasionally, I think, for large net worth individuals. The companies are all established out of state and regulated out of state. We regulate them in our statutes under banking and securities, and as a result of that, they're required to have an exam every 18 months. They're not to the level of sophistication as other banking and securities entities, and removing them from this requirement still allows the division to examine them as necessary and when needed, but it just allows for reallocation to those companies that are more sophisticated and in required and needing to have the examination done.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for the commissioner on House Bill 343? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Commissioner. Is there anyone here in Juneau or online who wishes to testify on House Bill 343? Okay, with that, public testimony is now closed. My only question, Commissioner, is there any objection that you're aware of to this legislation?
There is no objection. This was also a recommendation of the recently retired Director Kevin Ansom, and it passed unanimously in all committees and in the House.
Okay. Thank you very much, Commissioner. I want to say that we've been joined by Senator Michicki. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam
with
Chair.
That, thank you, and we will take a brief at ease because we have a new sponsor for House Bill 262, which is the Military Spouse Courtesy License. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Need a motion to move House Bill 343 out of committee. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 343, Version A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay. Is there any objection to moving House Bill 343? Okay, seeing none, House Bill 343 does move from committee. We'll go ahead and move into our next bill, which is House Bill 262. This has been introduced by Representative Kawasaki, and it is related to temporary courtesy licenses for certain non-resident professionals. And with that, good morning, Representative Kawasaki. Please feel free to share your bill with the committee this morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You guys work fast. You guys gaveled in right on time. I just wanted to be brief and then allow my staff, Mercedes Colbert, introduce the rest of the bill. For the record, Representative Scott Kawasaki, House District 1 in Fairbanks. My district encompasses or is next to the military base in Fort Wainwright. We have a great military town, and as you know, as co-chair of the Joint Armed Services Committee, we have 1.3 million active duty soldiers and armed services members. And 17,000 of those reside in our state. Over 70,000 veterans reside in the state of Alaska. Alaska is very generous when it comes to our veterans and our service members. We have things like VA tuition waivers within the University of Alaska. We have state defense liaisons that work with our school districts to make sure that children who come up with their families can find a good school. We have expedited hunting and fishing licenses. Even small businesses that give away free discounts and things like that for our servicemen and women. So we have a proud history of serving those folks. House Bill 262 strengthens the current mechanism that's in place to ensure military spouses have the opportunities and are aware of the opportunities with expedited occupational licenses so that they can get to work as fast as possible. In 2011, House Bill 28 was passed and provided these expedited temporary courtesy licenses to those individuals, spouses of active duty service members, so that they'll be able to practice their trade, find a job without having to go through what sometimes can be a burdensome licensure process. Similar legislation has passed in several other states, Washington and Connecticut most recently. Their version had reporting mechanisms so that the legislature and their Joint Armed Service Committees could track the executive branch process. What we found late last year is that while we had in place House Bill 28, which would allow for the expedited courtesy licenses, a lot of those courtesy licenses weren't being utilized by our servicemen and women's spouses. So this bill just corrects one part of that, and it increases the ability for the reporting requirements so that we as a body in the legislature can understand what goes on and how these licenses are being how the licensing is being met. So with me I have Mercedes Colbert, who will testify to the bill.
Welcome, Mercedes.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Good morning. Excuse me. For the record, Mercedes Colbert, staff to Representative Kawasaki. HB 262 would require the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to report on the progress of drafting and implementing regulations for temporary courtesy occupational licenses for eligible military spouses. That program was established in 2011 as HB 28, now AS 080163. And as the representative said, there was a study this last fall conducted by the University of Minnesota on behalf of the Department of Defense that despite a series of nationwide bills, military families were still having difficulties transitioning throughout many states, including Alaska, particularly regarding obtaining occupational licenses. The issue was reiterated again in November through the updated preliminary findings of the Eielson Air Force Base Regional Growth Management Plan. As part of that study, focus groups were conducted among military families to discover that challenges they may face when relocating to Alaska to serve their nation. One of the comments featured in these findings was that anyone who has a license in a different state is required to get a new license or certification in Alaska, and this is a challenge for our spouses. But the point of HB 28 in 2011 was to reduce the same sort of challenge, so the fact that one persists now shows there's still more needs to be done to improve the program. So, of the 13,396 occupational license applications last year, fewer than 35 were received for the military spouse request for expedited application. We have 17,000 active duty service members in Alaska, and at least a third of those are here with their spouses. So it seems that there is a very low number that reflects a lack of communication that maybe many spouses aren't even aware. So the Department of Defense found that many board staff in Alaska were not even aware of the opportunity afforded by the 2011 legislation. So we were hearing much of that through the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, that there was still more work needed to be done to improve access to these licensures. And to ensure communication among board staff, the Department of Defense, military community, we introduced this bill to help improve communication. So. And just to wrap up my presentation on it, we expect 800 to 1,000 spouses, just spouses, to arrive steadily over the next 10 years alongside more than 1,400 direct employees and personnel associated with F-35 platform in the Fairbanks area. So we represent a district where many of those families will be living, so that was a big reason why we wanted to introduce this to improve access to economic development. Since it took 7 years of lack of reporting to show that there was an issue or a shortcoming that had been provided if the reporting requirement was included in the original bill of 2011, we appreciate that the Division of Licensing has since been very communicative about what they've been doing to implement HB 28, and that the Department of Defense has been working with them more steadily. But we think that by passing this bill, it'll encourage more consistent, continuous communication. So what the bill does is it reports in the expedited application procedures and the progress made for implementing regulations that was established by HB 28 and 11, the changes to regulations that made to accommodate the needs of military spouses, and any plans for future regulations. It would provide the number and type of licenses that have been issued, and provide an update about the Department of Commerce's efforts to inform each occupational board authorized to issue these temporary courtesy licenses, and how they are working with the military community about informing military spouses they may apply for those licenses. Department shall annually produce and distribute to these board authorized to issue these licenses informational materials to improve the board staff's knowledge of the licenses and their application process and best practices in providing applicant support. And further, it would encourage a designation for a single employee at the Department of Commerce to serve as a point of contact for public information and inquiries and related to temporary courtesy licenses. And this report would be submitted to the Joint Armed Services Committee on or before March 1st of each year, ahead of the annual meeting that we do each session. And the department shall consolidate those two recent reports and submit a biannual report to the full legislature on or before March 1st. And we thought, what we mentioned before was one of the missing pieces of the legislation in 11 was the reporting requirement. And we found in those other states, the piece that they do is for their reporting is to report to their, Joint Armed Services Committee. So, as you know, Madam Chair, JASC acts as a liaison between military installations in the state, ensuring that Alaskans are aware of military missions while reaching out to those who serve here. And members of JASC typically represent areas of state in or where near military installations are located. So, and so therefore their families are also living in our districts. So the more information available to JASC members in particular, the better we can serve the military families who serve us. And that's part of the point of having that program in the first place. And we want to make sure we encourage economic development for everyone here in the state.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the introduction of the bill. And just so members know, we do have Sarah Chambers here, who's the deputy director in the Division of Professional in the Professional Businesses, Licenses. What is the acronym? BBPL. Corporations, Businesses, and Professional Licenses. Thank you. Are there any questions for the sponsor of the legislation, Senator Gardner?
So I just have a quick question in terms of reaching out to people who are newly arrived in the state and would qualify. So DCCED, or whichever acronym we choose to use, doesn't necessarily have that information. They don't have their names and addresses and things like that. So they would work through this JASC group?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I would like to defer to the department, if I may, on exactly how their outreach would work. But with reporting through this mechanism that the bill provides, that would be provided to legislators and members of JASC, it gives us, as legislators, legislative staff, the information to understand to what extent that the program is working, and to what extent they are working with occupational boards to ensure that they are providing as much information as possible for how the program works, and for how military spouses can find that information. We found that there were some issues with it online. Of course, we can, we've been working through the department to make it a little bit better, but if there's a point of contact at the department and a military spouse calls our office and says, I just moved to Fairbanks, I hear that there's a temporary courtesy license, I'm having a little bit of trouble, then we can refer to them to this particular point person who will know exactly the process regardless of what occupational license there is, if that answers your question.
Thank you.
And Senator Gardner?
Thank you. I have a sort of broader question. I know there are some licensees who with whom we have reciprocity with the states, and they can come in and, if they meet certain qualifications. And I just kind of wonder about all these occupational licenses, if it's safe and appropriate and it doesn't harm anybody who's going to the person with that license, why don't we just do this for everybody?
So that's I'll take the question. It's sort of a policy question, but generally what happens with courtesy licenses is that a person who has a license of a similar nature, has similar standards from a different state, comes up to Alaska. These are offered to them. It's a policy call on whether that could be offered in other respects. There are, like, for instance, teachers, physicians, and probably several other folks on a list, attorneys, that do have reciprocity, and probably Ms. Chambers would be the one to address all the other licenses that are available.
Thank you, Madam Chair, if I might.
Senator Gardner?
I understand that states might have more lax standards or even stricter standards about not only the training and the qualifications, but background checks and things like that, but assuming that it's appropriate to do it in some areas, I don't know why we don't make it easy for anybody who wants to come up here and use their training here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Kawasaki. House Bill 28 in 2011 was passed to expedite temporary courtesy licenses, if I'm understanding that correctly. Is that correct?
Is that true?
And how has that worked so far?
So through the chair, Senator Meyer, I guess the reason why this we brought this piece of legislation forward is to help complement the existing legislation. What we found in the fall of last year is that there's very few people that actually are taking advantage of this program. Mm-hmm. We feel that having some sort of reporting requirements in place would actually strengthen the existing legislation, and so that's why it was brought forward. As I mentioned, there are states that do have the reporting requirement. Washington, Connecticut are two that just recently adopted reporting requirements within their legislation. So this is really sort of a boilerplate language that other states have adopted. In your packet is probably the letter from the Department of Defense talking specifically about how this bill would complement the existing legislation. So that's the reason for this bill.
Okay. And Madam Chair, if I may follow up.
Senator Meyer.
That was going to be my second question, was about how many people have applied, and then those who did apply, how long did it typically take to get the license?
Yeah, and through the chair, Senator Meyer, I believe there were 35, and that Ms. Chambers could probably give you a more accurate representation of how long those expedited licenses took to be received, and what sort of professions those licenses represented.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. As a veteran, I think this is a great idea, and but I'm a little concerned about the time. You know, some of our licensing procedures are just enormously long, and I'm referring like to the psychologist. I happen to know that it takes forever for people to get those licenses. So my concern is, for example, we have a large Coast Guard contingent in Kodiak. They're often only there for 2 years. So they arrive in state, they begin the application process. That even expedited is going to take some time. So I guess my question is, why can't, can we, is it possible to allow people to apply for that expedited license once they know they're going to be transferred here and save even more time? And what I keep hearing is that once you're here, then you apply. What about applying for an expedited license before you arrive in Alaska? Because, like Coast Guard personnel, they know a year in advance what their transfers will be.
So, through the chair, Senator Stevens, that's a great question for the department. I think, you know, as far as when a person can apply for a courtesy license or an expedited license, I think really what we want is we want folks that who know they're coming to Alaska to be able to immediately get off the airplane and go into a career or a job. And I think that's really the point of this legislation. It's pro-economic development, it's pro-job, it's pro-military, all of the above. The details on how that would work, I think, would probably be best directed to Ms. Chambers.
Any further questions?
No, thank you very much. I think it's an important question, and I hope that we'll get the answer to that. You should be able to apply for it as soon as you know you're going to be transferred.
Any further questions? Senator Machiki?
I have a feeling it might be one for Ms. Chambers. No, I'm sure you know the bill quite well, but I mean, it looks like the maximum they can use a temporary is 1 year anyway. So we're talking about when they can go to work at the onset, not at the extension, because if they're here for a three-year tour, they're going to need a regular license anyway, it looks like. So that was going to be my question for either.
Okay. So it sounds like we should bring up Ms. Chambers. Thank you very much, Representative Kawasaki and Mercedes.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers, Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing within Commerce. And I'm happy to go through some of the information that I think is really relevant to this discussion, as well as answer any questions that have been asked or may yet to be asked. The bill creates a report. It requires us to collate a year of information and report to a legislative committee, and that is the extent of the bill. What we are working on and have been working on, but I think the bill has helped facilitate a discussion with military agencies and associations to look at how our agency and those agencies can better have a two-way conversation. We have been implementing these three different areas of military and military spouse licensure benefits since they were adopted. They've been in place, but we are hearing that the military agencies that best support spouses, in particular since the bill only pertains to spouses, that they don't have the information, they don't visit our website, or maybe don't even know how to find us. And despite all of our efforts, we need to have a more intimate relationship with those agencies. And that's occurring right now. I made a presentation last 2 weeks ago to the Forget Me Not Coalition, which is the amalgamation of people who work with military spouses day in and day out. So we have developed a relationship. I'll be meeting with them in person again next month, and am all ears. I'm very excited about the opportunities to learn ways, low cost, just changing the way we do business to help them find us, find out more information. We produced a one pager and distributed it so they can hand it out to their clients, the military families. The bill doesn't mandate any of that. That's just what we feel like we need to be doing to further the common cause that I think we all agree needs to happen. Just to give you a few numbers, I know that Senator Gardner asked about reciprocity. We offer over 100 licenses with 43 licensing programs and 21 boards, as you've heard me say before. Over 100 of those licenses are reciprocal licenses. Almost every licensing program has a form of licensure by credentials or licensure by endorsement, which means that they sort of get fast-tracked or have fewer requirements if they hold a license in another state. There are very few true reciprocal licenses, which means that you just walk into the state and start practicing. You may have heard of some interstate licensure compacts, particularly with healthcare professions, that our boards are very aware of and analyzing, and it would take specific legislation to accomplish that type of licensure. But almost all of our programs offer, and you hold a license over here, you come in and use those credentials to move forward with fewer barriers. You don't have to retake your national exam, for example. There are some licenses that don't have something like that simply because the license requirements are already so straightforward. Construction contractors, for example, you don't have to take an exam anyway. So it's one type of license, and it's pretty straightforward. You fill out your form, and you pay your fee, and you get a license. There are a few that require Alaska-specific knowledge that you can only gain by being in Alaska, such as a marine pilot. The folks who drive the cruise ships through the Wrangell Narrows, you want them to have some experience, although there are Coast Guard credentials, federal credentials, that can make that process easier and faster. Big game commercial services, you have to pass a local knowledge exam about the terrain and the culture in those areas. And so there are a few that wouldn't make sense to have reciprocity, but most of our licenses do. Regarding the programs that have been in place, as Representative Kawasaki and his staff mentioned, we have had over 13,000 new licensees in fiscal year 17, and only 35 were military spouse applicants, or at least identified themselves as military spouses when they came in contact with us. Those are in the areas of massage therapy, pharmacy, psychology, social work, barbers and hairdressers, which includes manicuring, and professional counselors. In speaking with the Forget Me Not Coalition, we believe there are probably military spouses who just didn't say anything and didn't really research, and so they didn't know, and we didn't know, and so they may not have been able to take advantage of that expedited licensure or temporary licensure. Again, that communication that we're developing is going to help with that. We do have a military licensing page that is visible and accessible off every webpage in our division. So if someone goes to get a manicuring license, they'll see military licensure and can learn more there. But again, we're trying to make that connection more apparent. Active duty military licensing, just out of point of interest, we had fewer than 20. And then people who want to use their military experience to gain licensure. In Alaska, we had fewer than 15 applications. We have worked with our boards. There's no major separation between occupational licensing boards and the division. We are the administrative arm of those boards, and we have worked diligently with them to make sure that they are aware of the need and do that regularly. We administer their board meetings, so any additional opportunities that we have to work with them, we're presenting those and listening to them. Is there a problem? Well, if our Alaskan military spouses are saying that they can't find the information, or they don't know about their options, or if they say, I've tried and it's too difficult, then we need to hear about it, and we need to take action to work with them. Our department's position is that that type of sentiment is unacceptable, and we need to provide better service. The report, the bill requires a report, doesn't require us to work more closely with military spouses and these agencies. So those are things that we're doing anyway. Regarding another question that was asked, Senator Stevens, we encourage actively everyone to apply as soon as you know that you have orders. Even if you, anyone could apply even if they'd have no intention of moving to Alaska. All of our applications encourage people to apply well before they know, and even our nursing license. We have so many people who wait and then they can't go to work when they get here that we tell them, apply before you move to Alaska. So we encourage people to apply as soon as they know and make sure that that gets expedited. So that's a lot of overview. It's a very complex web of agencies and people, and unfortunately the military spouses are, they know how to navigate bureaucracy and paperwork, and if they're finding it hard, we need to do a better job, and the agencies that help them need to do a better job, and I think our relationships that we're making now are going to get there. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Appreciate your comments, especially when it comes to consumer protection issues and also the history of the program. So with that, Senator Machicki.
So thank you, Madam Chair. Sarah, if my family is transferring to Alaska in December and I learn about it in September, I could apply for one of the versions of, or one of the licensures that is by endorsement credentials or reciprocity, and I could likely go to work when I arrive. What does the timing look like for that? Is that possible?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, if you were to apply in September and intend to go to work in December, if you have all of the documentation that's required, if you have your licensure information from the state you're coming from, and pay the licensing fee, then that is really the element that sometimes gets causes delays is not having a complete application. Again, we're constantly striving to make sure that it's very clear and very apparent, and our forms are not mystifying. But we do find that sometimes people don't provide all the information that's required. Sometimes with healthcare professions, if they have like hospital privileges, that information has to come from the hospital, or if they have a transcript, it has to come from the institution, because those are documents that are we need to be able to verify the source. So those can take time, and it's no fault of the applicant, and it's no fault of ours. The university just takes some time. So getting that started earlier, it's very likely, depending on the profession, that someone could be going to work in December. We've done a lot of work with our boards to help them have a streamlined process of looking at applications offline, doing it through a board management software that we have where they can review applications and within the Open Meetings Act, but expedite those and not have to wait for board meetings every 3 or 4 months. We do have a couple of boards that are uncomfortable with that process, but we're continuing to try to educate them on the need to move things along. So
just brief follow-up.
Senator Machicki?
So on the 180 and 180, that's temporary licensure. If they satisfy in advance, so just assume it's a perfect application, that's a regular license, not a temporary. Is that correct? If they satisfy all the requirements of that board?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, we would encourage them to apply for a regular license if it looks like they meet those requirements. We wouldn't want them to pay extra money or waste time with a temporary license if they can qualify for a full license. And that's part of the reason why some boards haven't adopted regulations regarding a specific temporary license. They already have a process or a license that does the same thing, and it would actually be more of a delay and more bureaucracy and more cost to the spouse to seek that temporary license. It is beneficial, though, when a requirement, many of our licenses require a Alaska jurisprudence exam, which is a pretty easy low-level exam just to gauge knowledge of statutes and regulations. Some of them are even open book. But there is a little extra layer of education and knowledge that the board wants to make sure people who are practicing in Alaska understand the laws that they're required to uphold. That might be where a temporary license might make sense, to buy them a little bit more time to accomplish some of those things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your comments about folks being able to apply early before they arrive, and that's really good. But I think it's really great what we're doing for spouses of military folks. But in the bigger picture, we still have a problem with the licensure, and I'd refer particularly to the Board of Psychology. You know, it just takes an enormous amount of time. So it's great that we can support folks coming in the military. I'm glad we can do that. But we also need to support Alaskans who are applying for these positions, and they should not be inordinately held back just because of whatever the rules might be. And what I've heard is not just being the time it takes to approve, but also the time it takes to let the person know they have been approved. So I'm particularly concerned about the Board of Psychology. I'll follow this up in other bills or in other cases, but I just think we've got a problem there. And thank you for all the help you're giving them. Thanks.
Chambers, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Senator Costello and Senator Stevens. We thrive on honest and transparent feedback and hearing about concerns and situations, and I would sincerely appreciate working with your staff on any specific names of applicants who've had issues offline, and make sure that we're analyzing those situations to find out, did something go wrong? If something went wrong, what was it? And we call it, feedback is the gift of awareness. And so we need to know people's specific situations. That particular board is one that does not approve licenses offline, so they can take a little bit longer. But we have a policy of within a week letting people know when they've been approved for licensure, and it sounds like perhaps that didn't happen or there was a miscommunication. So we need to know when you're hearing about specific cases and situations, because we tear that down to the root cause and can work with boards or work with our staff to improve training and processes if we need to. So thank you.
Senator
Stevens.
You.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess it is a big concern, because I know in the Board of Psychology, if folks are not notified that they've received, that they have the qualifications they need and everything is approved, then that has an impact on what charges can be forwarded to Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And it just has an enormous impact on financial matters. And I appreciate your efforts to clear this up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate you being here today. I'd like to go ahead and open the public testimony portion of House Bill 262 and invite the first person. We have several online and someone here in the room. So the first person I'd like to invite is David Neese with the Alaska Policy Forum. David, if you could introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony, please.
Yeah, this is David Neese, working researcher at Alaska Policy Forum. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you fine. Well, good morning.
All right. Yeah, we are in favor of this bill. We think it's a good. There's five steps the Department of Defense recommended to make it easier for military spouses, and the fifth one is collect data, and that's what this bill does. Department of Defense looked at, in their latest research, looked at cosmetology, dental hygiene, massage therapy, mental health occupations, occupational therapy, and real estate licensures in all 50 states. And their recommendation is that the language of the bills, having the word shall in there instead of may, and having substantially equivalent in there in the licensure is very, very important in the states that make it easier for military spouses. Military spouses have a 20% unemployment rate, even though they may be licensed in other states. They have to change their location often every 3 years, which involves more money and stuff. The other four recommendations coming from Department of Defense is that the websites of your licensing agencies have to have a military accommodation licensure on every one of their pages so that the information's out there. You have to educate your boards that's one of their responsibilities is to make sure that this works. That the license application has a place on there so that they can check a box that says, I'm a military spouse applying for a separate license. So there's a place to self-identify. And then they have to improve the ability of portability and continuing education. The Division of Occupational Licensing in Alaska does not cover two of the areas where you currently have shortages, which is education and health services. So if you had something that you could add to this bill that you'd recommend is making it easier for those particular occupations for military spouses. So if you have a school district on Kodiak and they need teachers, they can advertise for the Coast Guard, Fairbanks, Anchorage, the places where they have big military bases. Knowing full and well that those people will probably transfer out in 2 or 3 years, granting them a very simple form, a very quick way to get in there and transfer their license while offering them the ability to continue education, keep their license current in the state that it was originally to. So we're in favor of this bill. It's a good step out of the five steps that the Department of Defense recommends, and I'll send you the report. University of Minnesota did a real good follow-up on the Department of Defense, but enabling you to use that pool of talent that travels around with the military spouses is a very good thing, and we're in favor of this bill.
Great. Thank you very much, David, for calling in. Appreciate that. David's a constituent. Next, I'd like to invite Dale Vandehy from the Department of Defense, calling in from San Antonio, Texas. Dale, if you could state your name and association for the record and provide your testimony, please.
Yes, good morning. My name is Dale Vandehy, and I'm with the Department of Defense State Liaison Office under the Military Community and Family Policy within DOD. And we have been working with Alaska now for many years, and thanks to your support, have been able to bring to life many of our quality of life key issues that we work. This particular one regarding licensure, we've been working on it for several years, and it dates back to HB 28 that has to do with the whole issue of temporary licensure in Alaska for military spouses that was enacted in 2011. And then there have been comments already made in the hearing this morning about the process, about the University of Minnesota report. And so we're simply continuing to advocate on behalf of the military spouses in Alaska that everything is done can be done to improve this process and allow them to be able to make the transition to Alaska as they make to many other states. This particular issue is being worked in all 50 states. But an individual enlists in the service, but they typically re-enlist or stay in the service based on decisions around the kitchen table. And that's what this is all about, is to try to help the military spouses continue to advocate and allow for a career in their selected discipline and not just having a job. when they move from one community to the other. So we appreciate the support in this regard, and we thank you for whatever you can do to improve your processes. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dale. Appreciate you calling in today. And there's a question from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Dale. Could you just give us an idea of the length of assignments of military folks? Can they be as short as 2 years? Can they? And what are those usually? I mean, I know they often go much longer than that. Can you sort of help us understand that?
Yes, they run. The typical average is around 3 years. They can be more. I would say that. And there is a difference between skill sets, meaning occupations, whether it's a military occupational skill, an MOS, or an Air Force specialty code, depending on the requirements around the world where people need to move to. But I would say that that 3 years is typically the benchmark that we typically use as far as the transition process. In some cases, people stay longer if they can get a continuing assignment based on their specialty, but I would say that three-year average is a good norm.
Thank you, Dale.
Question.
Thank you very much. Senator Machuki.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Vandehey, this is another question for you. Do you rank the states on services to military families, and do you have like a sort of a list of gaps or things that you look for that we should be providing? That would be really interesting to us. We would definitely like to be at the top of the list for services available to service members and their families.
The Department of Defense over the past several years has been working with the states on issues that are determined to be those that need improvement across the 50 states. We have a website. It's usaformilitaryfamilies.dod.mil. The four is the number four, not the word four. And in that, at any time, we carry what's called the 10 key issues. And it is a by issue. You can look on there and identify where Alaska fits in realm of the other states on these particular provisions. Like I mentioned earlier, Alaska has been very supportive of these initiatives over the years, and they're just a continuing effort to make that transition. And why this came about was many years ago, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness was on the Hill testifying and talking about movement of military child in education, licensure for spouses, voting laws overseas when military members are deployed. And the Congress said, Mr. Secretary, thank you very much, but you need to work with state legislators and state governors because of state rights, which you all are very familiar with, and federalism. And these changes need to be made by the states in order to improve the life of a military member when they are residing in that state. So there are a series of issues that we work. You can call them services, but these are applied to what changes can be made in state law that help a transition military family. And that's what we're focused on in these 10 key issues on our website. Happy to provide you. We work very closely with your legislators on these particular issues, all for the purpose of trying to make sure that Alaska knows those kinds of things that can be done to improve these processes.
Madam Chair, if he could,
Senator Machuki,
if Dale could just repeat, that was at USA for Military Families at DOD.mil, M-I-L?
Yes.
Okay.
USA for Military Families .DOD.mil.
Okay.
thank you for asking about that website, Senator Manchiki. We all have newsletters, and perhaps we could share that with our constituents. Any further questions? Thank you. I just stepped out for a moment to say good morning to my son, who's about to go to school. So, next, we have Christy Rodriguez calling in from Anchorage. Christy, if you'd like to provide your testimony.
Hi, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak today. My name is Christy Rodriguez, and I am calling to from Anchorage, Alaska, as a military spouse. This is definitely an issue that is very close to my heart, being that I've been a military spouse for over 20 years and have definitely faced struggles in trying to further not only education and having to change schools every time we PCS and re-enlisting and starting and seeing what credits apply and which ones don't, but also at the end of that degree, thinking that I would get straight into the workforce and undergoing difficulties that I faced with starting my professional career. It is challenging for military spouses. For myself, I started out with a Master's of Social Work after many PCSs and stops and restarts when I was in the state of Arizona, and had accumulated hours towards receiving my LCSW in that state, but unfortunately was not able to complete all of the standards prior to that dreaded PCS cycle again. I was fortunate enough, though, to be stationed in Alaska twice, once before Arizona and after. So upon coming back to Alaska, from the website that was listed for the LCSW requirements, it appeared that I needed to completely restart my hours, that nothing was going to qualify because they were done out of state and with supervisors that were out of state. So that dreaded part came again where I picked up, got employment, and started accruing hours. It wasn't until I was almost completely done with recreating those hours that one of the people that I worked with said something about, you know, I think they make a special provision if you have hours from another supervisor in a different state. I think you can request that those be allowed. Unfortunately, the transparency just wasn't there on the website to know that. And I did apply for licensure to be approved to sit for the board and take the exam. And unfortunately didn't receive that until it was time to PCS once again to an overseas location. So this is one story. This is just one example, but I have so many friends that I know that struggle with this. This is a common theme within our military life, where we are constantly having to stop and start again. We are actually, if you look at our civilian counterparts, considering the same level of education and experience, military spouses are 47% underemployed to their civilian counterparts. 50% of us work in professions that do require some sort of licensing, and 73% of those spouses state that they have difficulty and have to reapply once they PCS. This is a huge issue. We have such talent and so many things to give, and we are eager to give, and we could greatly improve the workforce. But I think it's great that there's all of this spotlight right now towards military spouse licensure, employment, underemployment, and there's a lot of legislation that is being made. However, there's still barriers in the way that legislation is getting laid out, the implementation of it. The transparency of it and the ability to access that information is paramount. So without that, we really struggle. We're going to continue to see these problems. On average, military spouses, it's going to take us 12 to 18 months to get into employment, and that's for a lot of reasons. Oftentimes, our military members, as soon as we arrive on a new station, we don't have a house yet. We don't have kids that are enrolled in school yet. All of those things have to be done. And we oftentimes are the ones that are left taking care of all those things because our members have to get back to work. And so it takes some time to kind of get settled, to get all of our household goods, find a house, and get moved in. But there's also the struggle of frequent moves and the impact that that has on employers who view that as gaps in employment or moving around too much. Often employers stay away from us because they see us as, oh, well, they're just going to pick up and move. And they don't see the value of how we've been able to do moves and navigate so many different systems and jump through hoops and stop and start and just really excel in a number of different areas because we have to. We're very adaptable. I feel that this bill would be very helpful in allowing an opportunity to capture the data. It would push the issue and help us to see how things are going for military spouses and take things in a positive direction. So I appreciate everyone's efforts on this, and thank you very much.
Christy, thank you for your family's service in the military, and I think that we were all listening. Sarah Chambers is here in the room and those online, and so we really do appreciate your comments. I think this will be helpful in providing some a path forward that's more positive. Are there any questions?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And with that, we have one additional person here in the room who would like to speak. We have former representative and co-chair of House Finance, Bill Thomas, and also a Vietnam veteran. Welcome, Bill. Also, while he's coming forward, I want to mention Brian Duffy with Jay Baer, the Admin Services Director for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, has been online and is available if members have questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bill Thomas. I'm born and raised in Haines. I am the author of HB 28, which was passed in 2011. And the bill came from the Veterans Caucus. Back in the day, we had about 14, 16 members in the Veterans Caucus, and Senator Huggins was the co-chair for the Senate, and I was a co-chair from the House side. And this bill, this idea came up, and we worked with the Department of Defense to come up with the language with Casey Schroeder, my staff at the time, and we're able to pass this bill through. I'm glad we're finally getting this thing to work. It's been 7 years, and I was wondering why it took so long, but I'm looking forward to it going on and being passed. One of the reasons that was brought forward was military life at the time was a little different. You had Afghanistan and Iraq and the military coming in and out, and several of us were combat veterans realizing the need to have family with you at all times, and we had heard and were told and we've seen a lot of the spouses cannot afford to come to Alaska for 2 years or 3 years, and so we were made to put this bill in here to help support the family and the veterans. And so I'm not going to go on and on, but I just support this bill, and I think we need clarity. We need to support our veterans. I think you heard 70% of Alaskans are veterans, which is huge. And so I'm here to support the bill, Madam Chair, and I guess like deja vu all over again, right?
Thank you very much. And I do know that we have several members who have a meeting at 9, and I think they're sticking around so they can sign due pass mm-hmm. before the bill moves out. Yep. So with that, is there anyone else here in Juneau who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none. Anyone online?
Thank you.
Thank you. Public testimony on House Bill 262 is now closed. Are there any final comments before we move the bill out from members? Seeing none, as co-chair of the Joint Armed Services Committee, along with Representative Kawasaki, I want to thank you for bringing this bill before us. And for those who joined our committee this morning online to testify, I really appreciate that. So with that, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 262 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none. So moved, and we will stick around to sign the paperwork. At this point, there is no further committee meeting scheduled, but I will let you know if that changes. So with that, the meeting is adjourned.